As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Phil Jones and the incredibly detailed online trolls. Alan Smith's seven-year footover campaign continues. The quaintest stadium abuse ever hurled at a player or referee. The very precise football punditry subgenre that is talking about a player as they warm up before a game on TV. And decoding Sunday 6 p.m. Roy Keane. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 96 of the Football Clichés podcast. I am Adam Hurry and with me for the second consecutive week, perhaps even earning that man status, it's Charlie Eccleshare. How are you?
Who else but Charlie Eccleshare? Hi,
yes.
Adam.
Yeah, more respect due than that, yeah. Who else but, indeed. Yeah, not too bad. Thank you. Alongside you, in a virtual sense, David Walker. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm fine. I hear that you were at Carrow Road to witness Watford's... basement battle with Norwich.
Yeah, it was tremendous.
That's a fair thing to say. I haven't even looked at the table.
Well,
basement battle, I presume.
It's fair in spirit. In terms of the league table, we're not actually in the basement at all yet, but that is our natural place.
But were you going into it?
No, 14th, I think, okay. Going into it, and we're now 11th or whatever. But I was going into the game firmly of the opinion that we were the two worst teams in the league. So.
That's nice. That's sort of optimistic. Fine. We did all get to witness the masterpiece that was Emmanuel Dennis' somersault celebration, beautifully coinciding at its apogee, I believe the word is, of his trajectory. A friendly Norwich fan offering him a single middle finger in the background. A sensational photo, which I don't think will be beaten this season. But I mean, there are many situations in football, Dave, where I think a lot of abuse hurled from the stand seems quite futile because, you know, the target isn't going to hear it, isn't going to soak it in. It feels like an instinctive thing. This feels like the ultimate example. He's mid-somersault, doesn't care.
You don't get that in the Olympics, do you? Max Whitlock's never been given the finger from the stands as he dismounts.
I don't know. I think of all the times that could be quite damaging. Like, if he does... catches that out of the corner of his eye, you know, you're doing
right,
yeah, you're doing something that does require like quite a high level of coordination, the tiny margin, and all of a sudden
well, it didn't end there. I mean, whilst I was admiring this photo, I watched Match of the Day shortly afterwards and saw him wheeling away in celebration, and just after he completed the final twist of his celebration, just before he was landing, a really an otherwise reasonable-looking middle-aged Norwich fan right by the advertising hoarding just reached out and gave him a big wanker sign just before he landed. Just, again, I just thought, at least wait until he's landed and he might be looking at you to do it.
I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago, didn't we? When was it Reece James when he ran over to the Arsenal fans after he scored at the Emirates? And his was just like open arms kind of, you know, taunting in a sort of slightly smug manner, which I, as I said, I think I would be quite annoyed with. But if I was sitting in the front row as a Norwich fan and Emmanuel Dennis did that, this would be a part of me that would be quite impressed.
Yeah, the acrobatics, as we are obliged to call them in football circles. But yeah, just a fascinating snapshot of Premier League existence there, and I really enjoyed it. So much to get through for the adjudication panel today. But Charlie, I want to begin with this. Fascinating interview at the weekend in the Times, Jonathan Northcroft with Manchester United's Phil Jones, talking through a lot of things that people wouldn't have realised about his time away from the game and his injury struggles and that sort of thing. Really good interview, very honest, very open. Inevitably, I latched onto this little part of it. Now, we're all kind of familiar with how people describe what they think an internet troll looks like. But Phil Jones' incredibly detailed image of this, he says, "But, and I say this in the nicest possible way, I know who'll have the last laugh. I'm proud of my career, and when it finishes and I'm enjoying my life, and by the way, I'm super fortunate that I'll be able to do that because footballers are fortunate, the keyboard warriors will still be in their mum's spare bedroom, sipping Diet Pepsi that's flat, eating a pot noodle, sitting in their boxers, tweeting." So much.
Whoa, yeah.
So much. The spare bedroom thing is well established. I mean, there's no evidence. I mean, I don't know if anyone's done a census on this, but I mean, the spare bedroom thing is established. Boxers, sitting in your pants, that's fairly established. All the other stuff, this is stuff I didn't know.
That level of detail sounds like when a marketing executive will be trying to work out what's our target market. Okay, so who is it? It's kind of, you know, it's wealthy males in their boxers. They're drinking Diet Pepsi. Maybe it's flat. So maybe he's got like an additional life doing that afterwards, because he clearly has a good sense of kind of who his I was gonna say his market. That's maybe not quite right, because
the opposite. They're not really, of that.
Yeah, exactly. His enemies.
Dave, fascinated by his drink of choice, Diet Pepsi. I mean, Pepsi at all? I mean, with all due respect to the medium-rated carbonated drinks manufacturer, it's not really the go-to, is it?
It's not, no. And the image that he's painting, this sort of, I don't know, man-child, if you like, who clearly has no self-respect. Yes, happy to eat pot noodles, would ask why. I'd imagine he'd be quite happy to have the full-fat Coke, very least the Pepsi Max. But the pot noodle is one, though, isn't it? That the pot noodles often gets offered up as like an example of a pathetic man just eating anything
in the office.
It's just worse. It's worse than ready meals, even, isn't it?
Yeah. Above all, though, Charlie, I feel like Phil Jones has earned the right to do this. It did give me pause for thought about some footballers who have passed the Rubicon of internet ridicule to the point where it just becomes, you know, almost passé to take the piss out of them. And I feel like he's earned this. He's earned this outburst.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think it has gone beyond that point. I mean, he was one of the first, you know, he was one of the first memes, really, wasn't he? I can remember, you know. He's very well qualified and shows that in abundance here.
Just to linger on this point, I want to run through it piece by piece just before we move on. So mum's spare bedroom, so the parents have split up.
Yeah, it's never dad's spare bedroom.
At the very
it?
Least. Mums. Yeah, it's always mum's, isn't it?
Sometimes basement. Sometimes basement.
Yeah, I was thinking, basement room. Is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so at least a two-bed here we're talking about. So some space.
Loft is more sinister.
Yeah, for some attic. Reason. Attic's for old people, isn't it? Yeah, and ghosts. Sipping Diet Pepsi that's flat. So much going on there. I can't even begin to unpick it.
I would say, but sipping it, guzzling,
pleasant.
I would say.
Yeah, gulping it.
Yeah.
But the flat's a nice detail as well, because that does suggest a level of lack of care.
Yeah, things have gone really...
Yeah,
things have really gone really bad.
He's just been there for hours.
Because he's probably ordered a 1.5-litre bottle of it with a pizza.
With a Domino's,
and not polished it all off at once and has left it on the side or probably on the floor next to the mattress or whatever. I'm thinking it's like a mattress on the floor here, not even a proper bed.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
This is a bleak picture indeed. Pot noodle well established, sitting in the boxers, absolutely right. Yes. Fair play to Phil Jones. That's a very vivid
I think,
picture.
But wide fronts as well is the image for me.
It's
as
a bit 80s.
Grey wide fronts.
Yeah, a bit viz. I don't know. Anyway, moving swiftly on. Plenty of correspondence about this, Dave, from Sunday afternoon. This is Sky Sports' Alan Smith using a hitherto unprecedented word for a piece of skill by Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, no fullback wants to be faced with this. Ronaldo running at you in the box, throwing in a couple of footovers. Not surprisingly, getting his shot away.
Dave, what do we think? Do we think this is just an old-fashioned word for a step over? I just haven't heard it. I'm not dead against it. I just haven't heard it before.
Yeah, it jarred with me when I first heard it. But then when I sort of thought about it, I suppose it's still, you know, putting your foot over the ball. You know, sort of is what you're doing. But it's just not the it's a step over, isn't it? Yes. We know that it's a step over. Or a lollipop, as some people may call it.
Yeah, lollipop. I think, and if anyone out there can do it, our listeners can, I feel like I've heard footover before, probably from Alan Smith, and similarly felt like, oh, that's not quite right.
Interesting that you say that. I mean, yeah, I had a flurry of tweets alerting me to the fact that he'd said footover, and I thought, well, maybe this is the first time he's done it. No, says Twitter. June 2019, Alan Smith calls a step over a footover and I never quite get over it. April 2018, if Alan Smith calls a step over a footover one more time, I'm out. Football is finished forever. 7th of December 2015, did Alan Smith just call a step over a footover? Come on, bruv. 17th of August 2014... Alan Smith just called to step over a foot over. Give me your job. This has been going on for years, Charlie.
Yeah, I did. It did ring a bell. And I remember when I heard it thinking similarly, that's not quite right. I wonder with something like that if, because everyone knows the mean, it's not like you're misleading people, but I wonder if a producer would say, like, you know, just so you know, it is, most people say step over, and whether he would just be like, well, I call it a foot over, if it's just let slide.
Yeah, maybe. But Dave, let's weigh up all the probable evidence here. Alan Smith played football professionally for a long, long time. There's a suggestion that it was called a foot over on the training ground, which is, you know, probably the purest platform of all. So maybe we should give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Where did he start? Did he start at Leicester?
I mean, he was at Leicester early on.
Yeah. Well, wherever he sort of came through the ranks, he probably just had a coach. Maybe, even when he was a kid, maybe that was just someone called it a footover. Here, come here, lad. Let me show you how to do a few footovers. And it's just
maybe
stuck
it's
with
a Midlands
it.
Thing.
But, like, I do wonder, and this is, I'm sure, you know, Keys and Gray would tell me that, you know, players have been doing footovers since, you know, years and years ago. But how prevalent would footovers have been in that era of football? I mean, I genuinely don't know, but I feel like that is... The fetishization of them definitely is a slightly, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo thing. I don't know I don't remember in the early Premier League years that many footovers.
I don't know. I feel like you would have seen the odd one in, say, the 70s and 80s.
Probably,
I don't think they're that newfangled.
Sure.
Georgie Best.
Yeah.
Steve Coppell's been doing them for 40 years.
Yes. Superb. Yes. Yeah, fair play. But yeah, I'm willing to give Smudger Smith the benefit of the doubt there, because it must have come from somewhere. I can't believe he's just made it up and he's trying to popularise it. So we'll keep an open mind about that one. Moving on. Listener Joe Earp writes in, Charlie. It says, a piece of abuse aimed at the referee Gavin Ward at Portsmouth versus Oxford this weekend. You always micromanage everything, Ward. Why can't you micromanage that?
Fucking hell.
I mean, two levels here. First of all, just a very quaint thing to shout at a referee. Very businessy. And secondly, it implies kind of past knowledge of this referee's quirks,
style,
which I never like.
That, yeah, I mean, that is very... I do quite like very specific feedback to referees, because I think the person giving it thinks that that will have more of an impact. Because, you know, it's like, I've really thought about this. I mean, I got taken the piss out of the Sunday League once for saying to a ref, you've got so few things to be looking at. And he gave... My point being that it wasn't like there's loads going on. It was like a floated ball and he just gave a goal kick rather than a corner. But it was obviously like ridiculously facetious. And this is in a similar bracket of very specific feedback. I wonder if it had more of an impact on a ref than just the generic, your shit.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, a bit more cutting. I mean, this is very much setting the tone here, Charlie.
Is the referee's job not to micromanage everything, though? Really?
Well, I mean, we're in the era of letting things flow, so maybe micromanagement is off the table. I don't know. Maybe fans are going to get more and more annoyed at pernickety refs. But yeah, Charlie's bit of on-pitch facetiousness has really set the tone for our listeners' contributions here. We asked our listeners for kind of quaint / PG-rated examples of vitriol from the stand. Didn't think it would be as good as this, but it is. Wild Billy Six and Rob Draper both kicking us off with the absolute classic, Dave, which is the alleged and probably not actually correct outburst to Eric Cantona in 1995. Off you go, Mr. Cantona. It's an early bath for you. And which has been about 15 variants. I have also heard off. It's an early bath for you, Mr. Cantona. The mister is very much the crucial part of this for its complete bullshitness.
Yeah. And I'm afraid my brain just can't envisage any of that not being said by Jonathan Pearce.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like he could have, obviously we know what he said. It's in the intro to the show. But any of those, yeah, you could just completely hear, off, Mr. Cantona, it's an early bath for you. Like, that would work. That would have fit perfectly into his bit.
Moving on, Quantum Foal, Charlie says, I used to sit behind someone at Turf Moor who was fond of calling the referee a pillock. Yeah, that's good family-friendly stuff.
Yeah, that's quite that's quite good.
That's not going to get you thrown out, is it?
That reminds me, like, you'll see, if you know, you might be with like a parent or something when you're younger and they get like road rage and they'll call out things like moron as they like drive off. It's like that level, or like buck.
It's the same level of rage, I suppose. It's
yeah, I think it's quite similar.
Same switch that gets triggered.
And knowing that, you know, Burke, moron, pillock are sort of, love Burke, are more acceptable in that context with kids in the back.
James Hobbs says, that was toilet referee, Oxford versus Yeovil, circa 2004. Good memory. Kizzo86, at a Lincoln City game a few years back, some bloke behind me shouted, goodness gracious me, this referee is a charlatan. I started to think that some of these are made up. And towards the end of this, there is one that almost certainly is, but I refuse to believe that someone would have gone to the lengths of doing it. But Dave, this is really good. The idea of someone shouting that is sensational.
Charlatan is, I can believe, but the goodness gracious me bit is that strikes me as a potentially superfluous addition there.
Yeah. Listener Michael Cox, Charlie, I once heard, and this is 100% accurate as I wrote it down on my phone, bloody hell, ref, don't dignify his frivolous complaints by engaging in conversation. Sounds a bit rugby, doesn't it, Charlie?
That is very kind of the honour code where a ref can sort of just stand there and all will come good.
Really moving on a gear here, Dave. Mark Duffy says he heard, you are a twit of the highest order and I hope your wife gets syphilis. Courtesy of a quite well-to-do Spurs fan sat behind me after a penalty wasn't given to us against Ipswich Town in 1994. It stuck with me for some reason. I bet it did. In the middle there.
Exactly. Yeah, twit, extremely quaint.
Yeah, I haven't had enough impact here. Need to step it up.
Twit of the highest order, still probably not that bad. But then, wow, what a handbrake turn. Yeah,
that's pretty severe.
Yeah, really bad. Don't think he understands quite the long-term implications of the illness, but I guess in the heat of the moment, you don't. So that's fair enough. Charlie, Samuel Simmons, at a Woking versus Halifax game this season, one of the fans in front of us shouted, welcome to the South! Not only was this very odd, but it was whilst the ball wasn't even in play. He just screamed it at the nearest Halifax player.
Welcome to the South.
What are you going to expect?
What's the implication?
Yeah, was he trying,
South, it's quite nice here, actually.
Well, was he trying to say that we've got a reputation for being soft, but actually,
I think
look how hard we really are.
Yeah, definitely. Very good. Halifax theme continues, Dave. Matthew Wiley, once watching Halifax Town, remember a man a few rows behind, wearing a bowler hat and pinstripe jacket, no less, yell at the top of his voice, inadequate linesman. Surely did not happen, any of this. But again, why would he make it up? So
is he like the Halifax version of that Bradford mascot? He's just their man who turns up in a wacky outfit.
Bowler hat. no year attached to this, so I don't know when it was. I hope it was the 80s, at least. Really, really bizarre one, this, Charlie. I don't know what you're going to make of this one. Matthew Mackey, I once heard, oi ref, what are you doing after this? Still not sure if it was a threat or a genuine proposition. What a weird thing to shout.
Is that like a I'll see you outside?
Well, in a weird kind of way, I suppose.
But
it?
Yeah.
Maybe go for a pint?
Yeah. Where's good around here? That is a curious one. We had a teammate of mine said to an opposition player, be more magnanimous, which I thought was just ridiculous. Such a ludicrous request to an opposition. I think it was because he was like rubbing it in that we were getting battered or something.
You are not a good advert for your Sunday league right now at all.
Bearing in mind, I only give like the most embarrassing things. Yeah. But yes, we are thought of as complete.
Yeah, at least you're including yourself in this. It's good. Dave, Gary Regan says, at West Ham, we were losing during an injury break. Someone shouted, don't just stand there, practice. topical, if anything, for this weekend's events. The London Stadium. So maybe he had a point. Matt Stanger writes in, I once called Warren Button a mummy's boy when he was about to take a throw in and he turned around and laughed in my face. That's good.
Always,
when you
always
get
a gamble.
Interaction, one-to-one interaction back from the player, that's good.
A nice payoff.
Yeah, definitely. Really good stuff. This leads us inevitably to a tweet, Charlie, from Dylan Ross this weekend. Simply saying Fulham Football Club. And it had two snapshots. One, someone slicing very carefully a Victoria sponge on their wooden seat, presumably to share around. And the other picture, becoming a bit more popular, this one, of looking over someone's shoulder as they were reading a Kindle as the game was going on. The implication here being, this is all a bit too middle class for football. Mm-hmm. We've seen this a lot. The much maligned guy with popcorn at Wembley, which I thought was really harsh. I felt really sorry for that person. Bit of an ongoing trend, this, isn't it?
The carrots at the Emirates. do you remember that? Who I do know and is a lovely guy, and I felt really bad that he sort of became a meme, but it was quite funny, kind of a bag. And you know, the Emirates. There was the guy, I think also the Emirates, who was kind of laid down on like three chairs, both showing how little he cared, but also how many empty seats there were.
That's not good.
Yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, the much maligned gentrification of football.
Well, I mean, Dave, I mean, in the second picture here, which is the Kindle situation, a guy reading very intently, I couldn't help but spend about 45 minutes this morning trying to work out what book it was. I was zooming in. I zoomed in till it got too blurry and that didn't help. Then I zoomed out again and magically that got better. I don't know. It was like Blade Runner or something. And I finally worked out, with the help of Google's absurdly scary book catalogue, that it was The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett, 4.22 on Goodreads, so not bad.
Nice. Is that a contemporary book?
Yeah, 2020, yeah. Getting turned into a TV programme, I believe. Seven-figure fee.
Very nice. With the cake, right? Has he brought that with him?
Clearly.
They haven't got a
homemade,
cake store,
if anything.
Inside Craven Cottage?
It has a knife on him as well. Presumably plastic. Looks plastic and
I
short.
So.
One you were probably allowed to take on a plane in sort of the 90s. That level of knife.
How are you keeping the sponge upright on your journey into the ground? Is it in a bag? Carry
a bag? I
don't
think he tried to hide it. I think he probably just carried it in his hand.
In some Tupperware.
This is a cake. Nothing's going to happen. I promise. Yeah, maybe Tupperware. Maybe.
Should the stewards be allowing just...
What, you could launch that, launching the Tupperware and or the cake.
You could really frisbee a Tupperware lid, a medium-sized Tupperware lid. That's going to hurt. That's going to hurt someone. So, yeah, as long as you had the lid off, I think it would probably have been all right. But then, you know, the box itself. So where do you stop? But yeah, well done everyone involved in that. Thanks for that segment. Thanks for everyone writing in. Brilliant stuff.
I've got the only thing I've got to add to that is when you put that on the running order today, I don't have a football example of quaint heckling, shall we say. I have got one from a time that immediately sprang to mind when I was in Rogue Nightclub in Bude, Cornwall, one
great
summer.
Name for a nightclub.
Real shame that nightclubs are no longer interchangeable with names of gladiators, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, very good. And we were just there on a random, we'd been down there for a week, staying with a mate sort of at their parents' house, and just went there on a random night, didn't know what was going to be on or whatever, just thought it was a night in the nightclub, whatever, fine. But just so happens that evening, there was some entertainment on stage as well as the music, and it was some of the members from the mid-noughties MTV show Dirty Sanchez.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those guys?
British...
Pancho, was he one of those?
Yeah,
like
the British version of Thingy.
Of Jackass.
Yeah.
Like more British, Welsh, like worse, Remember. Much worse. The men doing horrible stuff on TV for laughs. And they did this stuff on stage. They had their act. I can't remember exactly what they were doing, but I seem to recall it was like there was some razor wire involved, and one of them like took their trousers off and their pants off and had to sort of jump over it. But obviously they didn't, and they landed on it, and it was a big gag. And then it didn't go down particularly well. I mean, it was sort of, there was a bit of laughter and some guys enjoyed
tough ground.
Out of nowhere, my mate standing next to me just goes for it. She goes, "You have no discernible talent." And like, everyone just looked at him, and it was like, oh, really awkward moment.
Yeah, yeah. Because you know halfway through that, I regret this, because there's going to be a big silent pause and everyone will look at you. Yeah,
it was only a small
place. You've got to nail it. You've got
that
to nail
is
it.
So cutting. But like, that genuinely might have caused some upset.
I think it inflicts more damage on yourself than the target, I would say.
Yeah. It depends. If one of them, Pancho, say, was going through a bit of a crisis of confidence and questioning, what am I doing here? What's sort of the purpose of this? I genuinely don't know what my talent is. And then someone calls it out.
Yeah, I've got run out of ideas to inflict pain on my bum. But yeah, very much in the spirit of it. Thanks, Dave.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Moving on, this is from the televisual delights of this weekend. Charlie, this weekend was the tipping point for what I have dubbed Declan's Law, which dictates that any TV pundit discussion about Declan Rice as he warms up before a game will inevitably go one way.
This boy's 22. He's a seasoned pro already. He's got great energy levels. He's an athlete, and he senses danger. When it's going forward, when it's about delivering cute and clever passes, I think he's a wee bit short in that. Will he get that? We'll have to wait and see. I don't know. I see him maybe ultimately being a defender. I think, you know, the modern central defender has to be good on the ball, has to take it under pressure and deliver passes. He can certainly do that from being sort of the last line of defence.
Charlie, what do people keep saying
this? Yeah. There's always...
Where does it come from?
Didn't he used to be a defender? Isn't there something like that?
I'm not sure he did. I think that's another part of it.
Is that just a myth?
People create that. Yeah, yeah. On today's Athletic Football podcast, Rashane Thomas, the West Ham writer for The Athletic, was on that and actually brought up this point himself. He was really getting really annoyed about people suggesting that Declan Rice should play as a centre-half. And I think it was there suspicion that Frank Lampard wanted to buy him and make him into a centre-half at Chelsea. Yes. That's where it's coming from.
That was
from,
the ongoing maybe. Speculation.
Yeah.
It's not without footballing merit, Dave. I mean, there are countless examples now of teams willingly playing midfielders as centre-halves because they want to be sort of front-foot teams. They're playing against opposition that may not be posing much of an attacking threat, so you're kind of getting an extra footballer in there. I'm being very simplistic here, but that is basically the idea. So it's not without footballing merit. It's just kind of slightly lazy assumptions. I see him as a centre-half. Well, if you ask Declan Rice about this, I reckon he probably doesn't want to play there. Surely that's the final word on this, isn't it?
It didn't go too well for Jordan Henderson and Fabinho last season at Liverpool, did it? So it's sort of this thing that works in your mind. And how many examples of it are there that have ever worked? I suppose
Barcelona are the only ones, really, aren't they?
I mean, Mascherano, right, at Barcelona, which is just kind of a strange, definitely the exception.
Yaya Touré did it at the Champions League final, didn't he, in 2009? But there are two things here, I think. One is that we do generally, we like sort of fantasizing about player positional reinventions. I remember with David Luiz, there was always that thing, you know, he's so good on the ball. Could he play in central midfield? You know, you remove the errors and just get him passing. And you know, now we see it with Trent. Like, he's so good. Could he be a central midfielder? But also, the cousin of that, which you used to always get, you don't hear it so much anymore. You'd be talking about someone like Patrick Vieira or something. It'd be like, and you know, if he could add 10 or 15 goals to his game, fantasy thing. Like, you just like, if you could make it.
If he could do this, if he could do this significant other thing that he doesn't do right now, he'd be a completely different player.
Like, yeah, this weird thing that took hold. Yeah. Like, that's what's missing from his game. Like, 10 to. It's like, that's a pretty huge thing to suddenly, like, foist on someone.
But, like, you make the point about Trent, right? And I think this kind of hits upon. This does hit upon a slight problem with some of the analysis of football these days. I know it's difficult. I know they've only got, you know, 5-10 minutes at a time to do it or whatever. And, you know, you can forgive Graeme Souness or people like him for having their own preconceived notions of what a footballer should do because they've done it and they've been there and the game is different when they played. But, like, there was, like, a bit on Monday Night Football about Trent Alexander-Arnold and then played in midfield for England and Klopp was saying he's the best right back in the world, so why would you play him in midfield? And then Jamie Carragher went on to show about, you know, 2 minutes of clips where he was playing in midfield for Liverpool. But he's the right back in the team, but he, just because of the way the game's played, he stands in the middle of the pitch quite often and passes the ball from that position. Like, Declan Rice probably does sometimes drop a bit deeper and sort of sit maybe in between the centre halves, and that's what sometimes midfield players do. That's how football is. It's like, we still, even in 2021, talk about football as if it's like Subutio or something. Everyone has to sit in their same position. It's always moving. Like, we should know that by now, right?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe position should become a thing of the past. But yeah, Rice is putting so much effort into being a midfielder. All I need is just Rice to come out publicly and say, I don't want to play centre back. I feel like that would stunt my career. I probably would get paid less on average every year for the rest of my career if I was a defender.
It's less fun. Glamorous.
I'm not up for it. Stop.
Definitely
saying.
Not as fun. Yeah, of course it's not as fun. No, he gets to gallop up the pitch, and he's having a great time.
It's for people who can't run anymore. That's the Sunday League rules. That's how it is. But it did get me thinking, Charlie, that it's a very precise form of punditry. As the player warms up with the camera, following him before the game. It's kind of slightly bigger picture stuff, isn't it? It's kind of at this moment in timey kind of punditry.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I'm going to play you 30 seconds of generic warm-up audio, and I simply want you to fill it. You can pick an imaginary generic player of your choice. I just want you to fill 30 seconds for me in the most pundit style you can. Hit it.
Yeah, I like him a lot as a player. You know, he's someone I watched a lot in League One last season, and I think he's got what you need. He's got the pace. He's got the athleticism. Now it's just about refining a few things, you know, and can he be a bit more consistent? You know, can he do that every week? But the raw materials are most certainly there, and I think he is someone who can definitely kick on, but, you know, he has to start doing that and showing that on the pitch.
Very good. Was that Andy Hinchcliffe?
That was, yeah.
Yeah, good. See, the him or Don Goodman, I couldn't quite work up. Then I got it in the end. Yeah, little Hinchcliffian twang there. Yeah, very good. Yeah, so basically, Dave, it's all about sort of adding things to a player's game, isn't it? And if he can do this, he's going to go on to be a sort of top player. It's just a very specific type of punditry that you've really got to get into gear.
And always positive, I find.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And just about not nailing your colours enough to the mast to be caught out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's open questions.
Yeah, exactly. He's good, could be better. Essentially,
but you're right. It is overwhelmingly positive because, I mean, I guess that's why. Because
they pick out someone, don't they? Who's not the main story, but he's been bubbling away. And
I'd say that about as negative as it gets is he's had his problems. And we all know that. Yeah, well documented. But I think he's over those now. He's ready to kick.
He needs a run of games. You know, if it's about staying injury free, and if he can do that, then there's a player there.
Very good. Very good indeed. Really enjoyed that, and glad you stepped up for that. Speaking of pundits. We've spoken about Roy Keane's punditry on this podcast quite a lot, Dave. It almost to the point where it feels there's nothing left to say about Roy Keane, the pundit. He does what he does. It's often very entertaining and often very sincere. I don't think it's completely an act. But I feel like it's time to decode Roy Keane, the pundit, a little bit. I'm not saying I'm alone in spotting this, but I really enjoy when he gets so annoyed by what he's seen that he kind of just sort of and boils down to simply barking out instructions to nobody in particular. Here's a little selection from Sunday afternoon.
Get hold of it.
Yeah. Language.
Sprint to people. Get hold of the ball. Make it stick. Knock somebody over. Create an argument. Start shouting to people. But get to the ball. Stop this shot. Put your body on the line.
So create an argument.
I mean, it's pure punditry, isn't it? No other fluff. Simply telling players what to do without them being able to hear you. Perfect. one theory, I guess, Charlie, is that we're looking at a very frustrated manager here, trying to try impose his will as much as he can on a game.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. I mean, I want to see, what did create an argument? Is that just like have a
this
row with someone?
Harry Kane, the captain, not really sort of digging into his teammates.
Right. Okay.
Enough.
Yeah.
Which I guess it yeah. Probably
so enough. Yeah. Okay. So it's that be more confrontational.
I can really imagine Roy Keane. I don't know if he's got kids.
I think he does. Yeah.
Probably does. Yeah. Sort of using this in a domestic situation, but like telling the kids off, like, come on, get
do
up,
your
yeah.
homework, tidy
make
room.
Your bed, clean the room.
Do your
come
job.
On, come on. It's 10 a.m. Get up.
We could apply this next. Level of Roy Keane-ness to perhaps his domestic life as well. Once he's run out of instructions to bark out and he doesn't want to let anybody else have a say in the studio, he basically ends up having an argument with himself by doing a little pretend voice. I quite like this too.
This idea when teams do well, they've done well the first half. Doesn't matter. We're a goal down. We've been a bit lucky. We've done all right the first half. Rubbish. Rubbish.
Admittedly not a mountain of evidence, Charlie, but I still do quite like his kind of pathetic little voice he does to try and present a counter-argument before completely
slapping it down, the imagined...
It's a great construct.
It is.
I mean, I would happily employ it every day of my life for anything.
Yeah, I mean, I often do, and I'm writing, I'm imagining, well, what's the most like snarky commenter going to be saying at this point? And I have a very, in my head, very specific voice for that I then... try and slap down or think, oh yeah, maybe they are into something.
Merest glance into his private life with his interview with Gary Neville the other day on the overlap, where they walked through a forest for what felt like a year, and he was really good on that, and it feels like we need to see more of that keen. He was really, really up for it. Obviously, still very passionate about elements of football he thinks people aren't getting right, but also just full of humour as well. And I'm really coming around to him as a human being.
It's me too. And I think as well that I might be wrong here, because he's probably been doing punditry for a lot longer than we actually think. But it feels to me like this is one of his longest sort of spells of properly bedding in as like the central part of that Sky team, because he's dallied with management and coaching and sort of had his time.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a special occasion to have him on anymore. Yeah.
So I think he's getting better. He's getting better. He's refining his role, his character. He's not always completely, you know, there was the sort of bit where he kind of went a bit too far on David De Gea a few seasons ago, and it was almost like every week it was which player can I kill this week? Whereas it's a little bit more measured, you know, even, you know, which is not that measured by most people's standards, but still. But on the Gary Neville thing, I mean, I think I know the answer to this question. It's probably a COVID thing, isn't it? But why are they always outside? It's like Roy Keane in the woods, Harry Kane on the golf course, Tyson Fury on the beach.
Well, I think in Keane's case, it was that he was taking his dog for a walk.
The dog.
Yeah. Otherwise, I suppose it is basically COVID. Yeah, but it's a nice setting because it's one take. For 45 minutes, which is really kind of
I was
cool.
thinking that the iconic dog from when he walked out on Ireland, but that can't still be the same dog, can it? 19 years on? I mean, that's...
Who knows?
No,
that can't
no
be
way.
The same one.
I mean, in dog years...
That's a lot.
That?
That's a lot of dog years.
Yeah, it's a lot of dog years. Who knows? Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So I promised you before we recorded, Charlie, that we'd have a little bumper package of Keys and Grey to round this episode off, and here it is. First of all... this is bread and butter, Keezy. They're talking about Harry Kane's travails.
Would City come back for him next summer?
No.
Oh, not at 100 plus million?
No.
He'll be at his 30th year.
29, glass ankles.
So you're not going to get
100 plus
million?
No.
I was thinking what topic... Yeah, there were a few there as well. I think the other thing they might go in on was that Harry Kane is a striker. He is playing around the halfway line. Andy, you're a striker. Yes. Is there any?
He loves it. I swear down it's in Andy Gray's contract that at least three times in a broadcast he says, you were a striker.
You're a striker, Andy. Yep. Okay. If you've been asked by a manager to play where he's going, what is it? Wouldn't have happened. And
No. Between the goalposts. Yeah, no.
We're used to this iteration of Keyes and Gray. It's punditry and it's professional in a way that it's in their terms. So there's structure to it, so that's fine. This is them picking apart the fallout of West Ham versus Manchester United with Nigel de Jong, where it starts to get a little bit just dad on the sofa.
Yeah. Martin Atkinson, at least he's been consistent this weekend. Consistently bad.
Yes. I feel sorry for Noble, though. I feel sorry for Noble.
I mean, I said to you, here, Nigel, when that was given, I said, they haven't got a penalty taker.
No, you said it, yeah. So you said it.
And then when he came off the bench,
and even without a warm-up, just straight onto the pitch, having his first kick about, and it'd be the most important penalty for this.
I've seen it done before. John Aldridge scored for Liverpool, top end, in those circumstances.
I've seen it. I experienced it with the national team, with Van Gaal substituted the goalkeeper at the last minute.
Yeah, but because of the saves, isn't it, for a shootout? He's got five opportunities to be here.
This bit of that little jungle of punditry and presenting, Charlie, was Keezy offering up the oldest possible example of the phenomenon he's talking about, only to get interrupted by an actual footballer giving him a much more contemporary, much more relevant example, and then him just disagreeing with it.
John Aldridge.
Actually, no, your example's rubbish.
John Aldridge is perfect. I was thinking, by the way, is there like a parallel universe where Keyes and Gray on their podcast do a weekly segment about us? And they're picking us apart and we don't even know.
Wouldn't be beyond Keezy to get wind of this podcast. He's a man that keeps his finger on the pulse, that's Keezy. I could see a withering reference to Adam Hurry in one of the blogs at some
cliched football.
No, he wouldn't address me by name.
Which is very much what we're going for.
Wouldn't address me by name or this podcast. He would say something withering about it.
A man who's made a life making jokes on Twitter.
Silly little podcast. Yeah. Etc. let's not lose track of what we're doing here. Here's part three of potentially classic Keyes and Gray. And Charlie, this is a hint of perhaps some early rumblings of what might later be described as dark forces. This is Keyes and Gray enjoying Touchline reporter Matt Critchley being soaked by a sprinkler, perhaps a little bit too much.
Yes. This was Matt Critchley at halftime earlier today. This is the take that we didn't see that we have to share with you now.
Sunny Etihad Stadium.
No, he's not. He's not, is he?
At full capacity this afternoon. A few hundred tickets remain unsold as we speak right now, and that will no doubt keep the manager, Pep Guardiola. Oh, they're happy!
It's Andy Gray's laughing, Charlie. It's just a little bit too aggressive.
That is, yeah, maniacal. We've all been there, haven't we? Where someone's like laughing at us, and at first it's fond, and then you start to get the feeling they actually are just being quite nasty and are really, really reveling in your misfortune, and you just want them to stop laughing.
But it is such a... Oh, God. Like, how many times must they have seen that in their lives?
Well, John Aldridge has been doing it since 1978.
They still find it as funny as the first time, which is nice. In a way, it's quite nice.
Isn't it massively convenient, Dave, that Touchline reporters still manage to find themselves within the radius of an on-pitch sprinkler? It's amazing, isn't it? That still keeps happening.
You never know where they're going to pop up these days.
Yeah, you just don't know. Well, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, they can pop up from anywhere. No, fair enough. Well, we've nearly finished. I mean, perhaps that's enough Keyes and Gray for the rest of 2021. Who knows? But we round off as we customarily do now with Premier League Year's Playlist Bingo. Dave, I'm going to give you the choice this week. See, it feels like it's your turn. I want a number between 1 and 1,379, and we will pick that song out and talk about its potential context in the history of Premier League Years.
There's been a lot of early years, isn't there, recent weeks. So I'll go high. I'll go for 1,067.
1,067. Yes, it's Beat the Devil's Tattoo by Black Rebel Motorcycle Club. Off the top of my head, I can't imagine how this is, what scenario we're looking at here, but let's hear it. Derby day, Charlie, do we think?
Oh, it could be, yeah. Ding,
ding, ding. Let's flick it on a bit.
But this is quite a montagey one, so I reckon this will have just been used as what the footage was at the time. So it's a kind, you know, so it goes into the... I don't think what derby it would be.
This would be, I mean, going by the crude logic of the numbers, are we looking at probably mid-2010s, I guess? Yeah.
But it's a...
Can you just do the voiceover,
yeah,
please,
Charlie? Sorry, so it's a kind of...
That's what we're here for.
It was a cut and thrust derby as Arsenal were held to a 1-1 draw by Spurs. It's there.
Like a flurry of yellow cards.
Yeah,
and then,
as always with these
pushing
montages, but then the goals as they sort of fly in. It's there. It's an early lead. But then the late kind of. But it's the equaliser. It's 1-1.
Managers shaking hands,
yeah,
at the end,
and it's,
knowing that a draw was a fair
It's a kind
result.
Of okay draw. It's pouring with rain. I'm imagining it's sort of November kind of time, and no harm.
I think you're right that it's November, because Adam's just shown us under the hood there when he shared his screen on the podcast, and two songs later in the order is Christmas Lights by Coldplay.
Ah,
oh,
yes.
Good detective work by David Walker. Well then, yeah, very good indeed. So yeah, probably would have been a sort of... you can see the breath in the air,
exactly.
Gloves on, midweek derby. Yeah, yeah, good, 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 good. Fantastic stuff. Lovely edition of the Adjudication Panel. Thanks to you, David Walker.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Thank you, Adam.
See you next time, everybody.
The Athletic.